Hello and welcome to episode 316 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is John and I play Protector Nemenoth.
Nigel and I play Kador.
Brent and I play Retribution this week.
This is Scott and I play Trolls and Kador.
This is Clint and I play Mercs.
This is Mayhew and I play Rhett.
Whoa, look at that. Good job, guys. This intro stuff's not so hard, right? Today we
had like top five.
Today we have a fun-filled episode with actual War Machine content, so you don't have to turn it off now that you've had the intro. We're going to be talking about the WTC fundraiser first, which is, I think, a pretty important thing just for promoting the game. Like, those videos are fantastic. So we've got Clint and Mahu are from the Enter the Crucible guys that have done a bang-up job on the streaming for the last 3 years. And they're currently running a fundraiser. Clint or Mahu, do you guys want to talk a little bit about how that's going and kind of where we're at and what we can expect over the next few weeks?
Yes. We started the fundraiser roughly about 2 months ago with a projected end date of July the 8th. Once July the 8th passes, the fundraiser will still be open. But once we hit that target date, that's when we have to start making the rough decisions. Basically, the last couple of years, we've had been fortunate enough to have community-funded ability to transport Clint, myself, and 2 to 3 commentators from Muse to provide coverage for the WTC. The thing that it makes our coverage unique is the fact that Clint is an audio-video technician in his real life, and he has access to a massive warehouse full of AV equipment, which has allowed us to create a 5-camera setup with the ability to switch between games each round, the ability to have a commentary table, and be able to have live commentators that can also hear what's on the games and be able to commentate on it. Last year, we were fortunate enough to have 5, which allowed us to have a runner to actually, like, go to the individual games, get clarification on how the individual games were going. We also last year introduced a telestrator, which allowed us to really point out the action as it was happening.
It also allowed you guys to draw, like, boobs and dicks, dicks on the screen,
which is
right?
Probably the most important part of
right.
The stream.
You have to make sure that within 2 zones of conflict that there is a strong thrust of action in the middle. It's important to show that on screen.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. It's one of my favorite tactical maneuvers.
So
I would call it a go-to, actually.
So this year we are roughly around, as the recording of this podcast, we're closing in on $2,000.
Dollars. American.
American. And we set the goal for $6,000. If we do not meet that goal, unfortunately, we will not be able to provide the same type of coverage as we did last year. Because when you think about the amount of funds that are required to make this happen, you're talking international plane flights, hundreds of dollars to get the equipment there in the first place, hundreds of dollars to transport the equipment to the venue. Also, we have to have at least 1 day of room and board to cover the dot time that WTC does not volunteer us stay. So it gets expensive really quickly, which is why
about just to give you percentages on it, about 80 to 90% of the money that's raised just goes to plane tickets. So that's where the main expense is. We never used any money for food or, any of that other stuff. Just room and board.
Or
and,
to party.
And a flight there.
Or to really buy equipment. So most of the equipment, like, we use cameras that Muse already owns, cameras that you guys already own.
Yeah.
And we use equipment that you get from the, the job that you work at, right? So,
yep.
So this.
And the important thing to stress is we only use these funds to do this job. Like, it's not paying for vacations for either of us. And it is, and John can attest to this, it is 3 days of hard work to make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people understand the amount of, because it looks like just doing a stream, right? It just looks like, oh, there's some guys talking about War Machine. But the Clint and Mahu work so incredibly hard while they're over there. I mean, from setup to tear down, and then just making sure everything is working during the stream. There's so many points of failure from, you know, internet in remote places. Like, you know, we were at a resort in the middle of nowhere in Holland last year. And I know that, you know, it's just difficult because you have to have a lot of upstream pipe in order to make it work. And so you guys are constantly trying to adjust things as the internet comes in and out to make sure that that gets delivered to people, making sure lighting is good, you know. It's just, it's a lot of work.
Scott. It's fun, though.
Scott?
So one thing I will say is that from someone who's never been but has always watched all the coverage, not only is it an amazing amount of work, but as a community, there's a lot of value to be derived from this. So we're always looking for the next big thing. We're always looking for our fan favorite players or, you know, like watching these awesome combos of the newest list tech and stuff. And a lot of that is developed out of the WTC. So this gives us kind of a glimpse into that world. And it as a player who's trying to get there someday, like, it's incredibly important to me, as well as the rest of the community, to get behind this and to look at, to kind of look at the World Team Championship and enjoy, like, all this coverage and enjoy, like, all the commentary, because it gives us something to kind of relate to and into in the WTC. So I think there's a lot more value than just, hey, watch a game. Like, it's to me, it's more than just watching that game. It's rooting for your team, rooting for your country, rooting for your friends. And then on top of that, too, it's getting that glimpse into, you know, maybe that next level play that maybe you don't have access to all the time. So I really can't say enough that, like, get behind it and support this, because we want those streams to be as good as they were last year, if not better.
Yeah, so typically the way it breaks down is I think that the stream is 5 rounds, and there's 5 cameras going in every round. And most games of War Machine are, I would say, an average of an hour and a half to 2 hours, right? So plus bonus coverage. There's lots of interviews and things going on, you know, in and around the event during the stream. So, you know, we'll round it off to 2 hours per round times 5 cameras, so 10 hours per round. So you're getting, like, 50 hours of coverage out of this thing. And I know that most people would spend, you know, $10 on a movie ticket for an hour and a half of entertainment. So if you just kind of break it down that way, if you could just chip in $5 or $10, and if we could get, you know, a couple hundred people to be interested in watching this thing, because, you know, based on the stream numbers, there's many thousands that watch it based on downloads. And I think during the live stream, we had 700-800 at a time, right?
That's correct.
So if you guys could all just chip in the cost of a movie, like, we could make this thing happen again. And I think it's a worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. It's super worthwhile. Also, it's been just must-see TV for the last several years. You know, waking up at, like, 3 a.m. and then, you know, see, like, getting the games going. It's awesome. It's, if nothing else, for the drama llama factor, because you never know who's going to, like, be the next up-and-coming savage cheater who's going to, like, embarrass their country. And you get to basically watch it all unfold in, like, spectacular. Because now it's just, like, live. There's no, like, recording it and editing it and then, like, burying it under the carpet. It's just, like, if someone's going to blow up, you're going to basically get to watch it in full Technicolor.
Nice.
Mayhew?
Yeah, and a big part of that is, at where we're at as a fundraiser now, basically, is something's going to happen this year. We're at the point where something's going to happen, but what we'll miss if we don't get fully funded is obviously the commentary aspect of it, which is, like, a huge aspect of the engagement of this stream. It is, you know, actually being able to understand what's happening on the screen right now. So that's a big deal to us, and we really can't bring that if we can't get fully funded.
I'd like to add on to that. I think it'll be very difficult for the listener. One of the big things about the WTC that we do is that we go back and forth between tables. We try to catch the action as it's happening on each table. And, you know, we're, two of us are usually always looking at the multi-view, which shows all the screens going on at the same time. And we're trying to figure out, okay, you know, on this table, Butcher 3 is going for assassination. We got to jump over there because obviously that's something you want to watch. Without commentary, you're just going to either watch one table or kind of jump. You'll see it on the screen, jump around, and it's just not going to be – obviously, it's not going to be like it was in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might have to really think about what the coverage is going to look like.
Agreed.
But, I mean, that's – you know, I just think that – for me, anyway, it's really important because not only do you get like during the event, you get the live stream that you can watch, and it's like Nigel said, it's much CTV. And what's cool about it is, you know, sometimes a game of War Machine can be a little bit dry, but when there's five games going on, there's just like one thing after another that you can cycle to kind of like keep you engaged with the broadcast and really enjoy that time. But also, all of those games are recorded in their entirety and available. So if you have something, you know, if you're just like, man, that game between, you know, the Germans and the Australians, you know, they're, you know, Sasha and Tom Guan or Sasha and someone else, you're just like, man, that game was amazing. I'd like to watch that from start to finish. Well, you'll have it available to you and they'll all be there, you know, for posterity's sake that you can go back and kind of get a glimpse of, okay, what were the best players in the world playing in 2017. Well, you'll have it, and it'll be it's kind of fun to go back and watch those videos. I sometimes do that. I'll go back and I'll be like, ah, I kind of want to see Billy Crookshanks. You know,
it's also great because in addition to going to all the games, so you're like, if a game's boring and you guys cut away, but it's not just that. It's also the results of like the incoming results. So. Oh, it looks like Mike Puryear just won his table, so now Team America's up 2-1, and then these last two games that are being filmed are more tense. But also, other results are coming in, so like Team Sweden just beat Germany, and then Team, you know, so you're getting like these, like, it's like watching the Olympics, so you get these, like, awesome, like, results coming in from head-to-head matches, you know, and then you're just, like, nonstop getting awesome data, like, information that you're excited to hear about, because you're kind of curious, like, you know, you have... Everybody has, like, you know, if you're an American viewer, you still want to see the Canadians and, like, Team England, and you have a bunch of favorites, like Team Sweden or whatever, and so you're still kind of rooting for other guys. No one's rooting for Australians, so, like...
No, literally yeah. No one's... Well, what's weird, though, is the Australian teams are kind of sweet. Like, I super love those guys, but I'm definitely not rooting for them.
Yeah, just Whaley.
Yeah.
I just hope Whaley goes 5-0 and then they all lose savagely.
Well, you gotta love Whaley. I like Colin Hill, too. Like, that guy's awesome.
Yeah, he's no Whaley.
I am a little biased, obviously, but I do believe that the WTC is the best broadcast opportunity for War Machine Awards, because not only is the format very broadcast friendly, but it's also it is one of the top events of the year.
It is the largest concentration of good players. I've been to every event, I think, for the most part.
I also think that in terms of commentary, you have. There's not a lot of other streams that have competitive players doing commentary. And I think that's something that we added even more of when we had Keith last year. And I'd like to keep that going. If it's just me and Mayhu, we haven't won anything big yet.
You guys are also terrible.
Yeah, we're also terrible.
I'm playing. I'm sorry.
Hashtag Borka.
Hashtag Borka. So, you know, you can either listen to us plebs talk about it, or someone who's won something.
Well, I think the big thing that I really want to stress is we have to get the equipment over there, and we have to get you guys over there to run the equipment, and then anything past that is great. Like, I think there's a lot of value that can be added from adding some commentators. But I really want those games recorded. I really, 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 really want just to have access to that, because that it's just fun. Like, it's a great showcase for the game. So right now, I feel like the game needs that showcase. Like, I think people need to feel good about the game, and they need to see, like, just because the WTC is like a huge positive vibe, man. Like, it's great.
Are you talking to the crowd, or are you talking to yourself?
I mean, that's fair.
But it's also a great way to get exposure to, this is the one thing I wanted to stress, like I joked earlier of, you know, to Europeans funding this, that it might be the best way to see your favorite team smash Americans. But there's actually truth to it because it's also one of the best ways to get just a broader exposure because you guys don't just follow the American teams. It's not like every round, well, let's pick an American team and who they're playing. You actually chose, you know, just.
We actually planned that too. Like, it's a big, even from the first time we did it in 2015, it was a big deal to me to be like, I want to showcase as many different teams as possible.
We also really tried hard to figure out who was awake at the time and put them on. So when it was like Australia's time to be awake, like their kind of working hours, we tried to put them on the stream. And when it was a European team, like the European team usually was showcased in the morning and then the USA team is kind of showcased later on in the event. That's not, you know.
Well, North American.
North American, yeah.
Canadians count a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Canada, I really hope Tim Behnke does terribly so that he can be our Bob Costas for next year because yeah. I think he'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So suck it up, Tim.
I mean, is anybody rooting for Canada? I feel like you can't root for Canada.
I feel like it's physically impossible to actively hate Canada.
It's true.
So... I think you kind of root for them by default.
I mean, you don't root against them. That I'll buy. I mean, you definitely root against the United States, right? Like, I understand that intrinsically.
Yeah, especially all things considering.
Yeah, you can't really root for the Scottish because of Crookshanks, who I love, but it just makes it impossible. You can't root for the Australians. Like, who can you root for?
I'm going Team Italy this year.
Team Italy.
That's my. I'm putting money on this. This is going to be my winner.
The Italians.
He really likes pizza, and I think that makes him think that he's Italian friendly.
So they'll probably have Borca 1 on their team,
right? You could.
It's an unbeatable.
It's an Borca.
Yeah, I mean, you could root for the British, but everybody hates them. You could root for the Swedes, but you have like, I don't know, like. Ricard.
There's one team that everyone can agree on, and that's the Belgians.
Yeah, you can root for the Belgians. That's true. Those guys are sweet.
It's on the home turf this year, so...
And they're kind of the ones that kind of got this whole party started, right? I mean, it's not just them, but they hosted the very first WTC. So a lot of the guys... Go ahead.
They've been working up their karma, too. Like, I've got enough chocolates and beer from Benoit to, you know, I'm willing to push my karma onto them if I have any left.
Shout out to the ETC number one fan, Benoit. I love that guy. That guy's awesome.
Yeah, they're all pretty awesome. So thanks, guys, for jumping in. You know, I really hope that people just dig a little deep and help at least get the equipment and get these technicians over there so that we can have the games recorded. And then as far as like...
Well, thank you for having us on.
What's that?
Well, thank you for having us on.
Yeah, honestly, we can do this again, too. Like, if it's... The nice thing is that the fundraiser keeps going. We can check back in like a month. We'll just do it like every month until... Try to get people, you know...
I would be down.
Yeah.
Clint?
Sure. Oh, one more thing before we go. John!
Oh, God damn it.
Yes. Why don't pirates shower before they walk the plank?
I don't know, Clint. Why don't pirates shower before they walk the plank?
Because they'll just wash up on shore later. Arr!
Nice.
Perfect. That was amazing.
Could we at least tell a good pirate joke? Like,
that was a fantastic one.
That was not a good... That was a terrible joke.
That was an amazing one.
It wasn't even funny. Like,
John? Are you really asking for more pirate jokes?
No, I'm asking for if you're gonna torture the audience with pirate jokes, at least make them chuckle worthy. Like, good gravy.
I'm pretty sure we can find a good one if we keep going through them.
That's not possible.
We can spend the next 5 minutes on this.
No. Thanks, guys, for coming in. Really appreciate having you on the show. We'll check in again in maybe a couple weeks to a month. Just so people are aware, the fundraiser currently is at closing in on $2,000, which is close to enough to get the equipment over and maybe one technician. Is that right, Mahu?
Yeah, that's correct. That's where we're at currently.
Okay. So if you guys could help out and help us get you know, get a little more done, that would be great. So do you guys have any last words?
No, thanks for having us on. Thanks for giving us this platform to speak to the community.
Yep, thanks again.
Thank you for the pirate joke.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. All right, see ya. We're off.
Thank you.
Hasta la vista. All right, well, that was fun. So what do you guys want to talk about War Machine-wise? Anybody have anything that's they've been thinking about or excited to talk about? Don't all you guys jump in at once.
go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, like, so in between mad fits of putting together Marauders and finishing up War Wagons, I've been really thinking about Grim 2 a lot. And it's kind of interesting because we talked about it a little bit in that we think SR-17 is probably going to change the way lists design, or just lists are designed to take advantage of the scenarios. So I'm kind of curious if you can get ahead of the meta, if you will, by taking something designed to beat the thing designed to beat the meta, right? So instead of playing like the rock, paper, scissors game of like everybody plays Jack Spam, I'm going to play something that beats Jack Spam. Instead, you're going to play something that beats the thing that beats Jack Spam, right? So I've been kind of thinking along those lines with Grim 2, and I don't know how productive that is yet because we haven't seen anything concrete on SR-17 other than the one insider from Hungerford. But I'm kind of curious on what other people's thoughts are about trying to get ahead of the meta that way.
It's actually a really interesting subject. Getting ahead of the meta is tricky because not only do you have to, like, predict where the meta is going, which is a difficult endeavor at best because of the size of the catalog, but then you have to, like, actually understand what counters what, which is it's always a fascinating discussion because you literally can talk to two different people and one person will say, you know, they'll both say they literally never lose a matchup, and it's the opposed matchups are just like, ah, I never lose to Krix. And the Krix player says, I never lose, you know, because what with Hexy 2, and I never lose to, you know, I never lose to Hexy 2 with Krix, like, you know, and they'll both be convinced that they can't lose that matchup, and usually the answer is somewhere in the middle. So, like, it's a very, very difficult thing to, one, protect the meta, and then, two, to actually understand well enough to kind of get in and get ahead.
I also think that one of the keys is sort of the Brent Simon approach, which is literally showing up on Friday, kind of getting a gauge for who you're going to see on Saturday, and then you've got to basically have enough games in your belt to make adjustments that night on models that you're familiar with and then go with that plan, because you really just have to adapt to who you're going to show up against. So, like, you know, I think it's a trap to even worry about Jaxman. Actually, this is like the me all of Mark II problem, which was I've got to have an answer for Lilith II. And if I brought the answer, I didn't run into her. And if I did, and I always ran into her. So the, you know, you get damned if you do, damned if you do, don't sort of situation where you list chicken yourself basically before you even get going. So just sort of take, practice in broad strokes. Basically, as long as you have a plan versus anti-box spam and then anti-troop spam and then, like, ghost fleet and, like, weird, just have a plan for all those things and then have that whole toolbox on hand, you know, when you show up to the event and you kind of get a feel for who you think, because you'll have, like, three cracks at qualifying. A master's is sort of a protracted sort of a thing. So you'll go Friday night, you'll have a couple chances Saturday, and you'll adapt as you get a feel for who's playing. I mean, I think that's ultimately if you want to do this. But, yeah, planning right now, like, if you're on Wednesday nights with Brendan Shirley, like, trying to figure out, like, what's our best odds? Like, that's tough. That's really tough because who knows he'll be there.
Well, yeah, it's really tough. I mean, I've always found War Machine works better for me when I'm thinking about the meta is to paint in broad strokes and really think about either posing really hard questions or, you know, being ready for, like, things in general. So, like, I think Jack Spam is a good thing to be ready for in general in that you have to have – it's just a solid gear checklist. Like, you have to have the tools in your list to chew through. 7 to 10 armor 20 jacks. Like, I would not feel comfortable if I didn't have a list I could go to that could actually chew through that. And the number of lists that can actually chew through 10 Marauders is a lot more narrow than I think people realize. They think they have an answer, but it's actually pretty difficult.
So I think one gamble you're taking there too, Scott, is if you build what beats the list that's beating everybody, then you still have to get out of the first couple rounds of people playing. Like if in your example, Jack Spam is everywhere. People are going to bring infantry to deal with Jack Spam. I'm going to bring something that deals with infantry. I still got to get through my Jack Spam first round and probably second round to get to my sweet spot of crushing hopes and dreams in the third round. And that's always a fine line to balance, especially if you roll the dice poorly.
Yeah, I really think that dark horsing is about not answering a meta, but you're trying to just ask a question no one's even thought was going to be asked. So you just need to try to figure out, like, get in the dojo in the laboratory and come up with some sort of bizarre assassination run or some sort of manipulation of your rules interactions, or, you know, you got to come up with something that's like a little bit of a curveball so that no matter what you're playing against, if they're not careful, you'll suck out on the river. And then that's, for me, that's dark horsing. Whereas, and I don't know if Scott exactly was saying that that's what he's going for, but that's sort of what it sounded like to me, was like, I'm going to, because that's sort of the, what dark horses prey on is, like, they want to be able to, like, ride the wave. They know what the meta is, what the big bully is, and what the main counter is, and they want to come in with something that feeds in on the tail end of that. And then
I think dark horsing is actually really interesting, because where you're trying to garner an advantage is you understanding how to play the matchup optimally or near optimally, and hoping that your opponent, who's sort of building their, if you truly have a dark horse list, like something that nobody plays against, like, he's building his plan sort of on the fly. Mm-hmm. And so it's just going to be less optimal.
That's why I literally, in the history of War Machine, all editions that he was ever in, which, whatever, that's why Strakoff is like my guy, because he's just the ultimate dark horse. He's like, in every edition, he's been relatively unscathed. He's just a guy that when you plop him down the table, no matter what the matchup is, and a lot of times he plays into a bad matchup, like Haley 2 isn't very exciting for him, but they don't know what he does. Like, no one knows what a 21-inch threat looks like or whatever, and they're not totally prepared. So, like, and all the different ways he'll get it. So then you just win because you have a list that they're not like, you're like, oh. But it's more important that you're playing something that they don't know than you preying on knowing what they do necessarily.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about, so here's why dark horsing I think is hard. Not only do you have to have something that is not seen a lot, but you have to play it a lot.
Yep. And then you got these Brent Simons who play like 60 games a week, and so they've basically seen everything. Because yeah,
I average like 5.
Unless it's your birthday, and then you average like 7,000.
Yep.
I feel like you average more than 5.
Actually, 5 a week. I mean, that's still a lot. That's like one a day.
I mean, Brent, you're at
159 games this year, John.
You're at 159 games.
Yeah,
there's been
about 5 to 6 a week.
Yeah, I just felt like it's more because you're literally at a tournament every weekend, which is 5 games, and then you go to like 3 game nights. You must really slack off at game night.
Sometimes I do. It's the resting up when I only get 1 game a night.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not doing that math wrong, right? Because you're at an event almost every weekend. And most events are at least 4 rounds. What's that?
I cut back a lot this summer.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. But no, during the school year, I was doing an event a week plus a game or two on game night in Columbia. And then before War Machine weekend, I'm going to take probably a week off work and just sit in game for the entire week. But that's because I have a lot of PTO I need to use.
Sounds like fun.
When you're like working out or doing like a physical activity, there's like the runner's high you get into where you just get into the zone and you sort of have like a you get kind of an endurance high just from pushing yourself past, like, a barrier. I feel like there's, when you're playing War Machine, there's sort of a corollary. When you play X amount of games, you sort of get into this, like, wavelength where you're sort of the, you just, you're not, like, you're the alpha predator. Like, you're comfortable with everything you're going to see. You don't need to ask people what their cards are. You're just really comfortable with the game, and you're not, you, like, have zero. And I'm presuming that, like, Brent's in that zone. But, Brent, what do you think? How many games a week do you think you need? I'm thinking maybe three. Is that basically, like, what's the minimum number you think hours to put in before you get into that sort of, like?
Initially, you're going to probably want to put in about 6 hours, 6 to 10 hours a week, honestly. As you progress, so I kept my total hours per week about the same, but the number of games per week was bouncing all over the place because it was either I get four games in 3 hours because they're very lopsided, or I get one game in 3 hours because it's a finesse positioning game and we're both learning the matchup really well. Mm-hmm. And then at some point it kicks in with quality of games. It's the I can play a learning game against the new guy who just bought a battle box and show him some stuff, but I'm not really even improving muscle memory at that point.
I'd say you don't take the avatar in your battle box games.
I try to avoid it because that's Meenoth, and Meenoth is bad. But you know, the Nephilim Bolter is perfectly fine for a battle box.
That's interesting, Scott. What do you think? Like, so Brent is sort of a player that has sort of climbed the mountain, and you're sort of a player that I classify as climbing the mountain. Like, is there any questions that you want to ask, like, how I get from where I'm at to where I want to be?
Oh, man. So many questions. Brent and I talk a lot. At least I think that's a safe thing to say. Like, we talk a lot offline. And, like, I would say probably the biggest question that I would ask and I think it's relevant for just about everybody, is at what point, this is the biggest thing that I see, at what point have you determined that you are comfortable with your Warlocks or Warcasters and that you know that's where you need to be? And so at that point, it becomes the long stage of grinding and fine-tuning very specific lists. Because it feels to me like one of the biggest problems that I see local players have, because I'm probably more consistent with playing the same stuff than my local players are, and I'm not as consistent as doing that as, say, someone like Brent or Nigel is, or you, John. So at what point, or how, when do you get that feeling that you're just like, okay, this is my pair, this is my Warlock or Warcaster pair, I like this pair, they cover all the things I need to cover. How do you get to that point? And, like, how do you just keep playing the same Warlock with the same list over and over and over and over while fighting, you know, burnout? Because at some point, the game's super deep. Like, you do want to play, like, other stuff because there's all kinds of really cool stuff out there to play. So how do you burn yourself past that?
So I've got a multi-part answer for that one, Scott. And I'm sure John and Nigel both have different perspectives. For me, step one is to identify my two-list pair. I find the one caster I think solves 60% or more of what I expect to see for the field. Extrapolating on that one, building for your meta. The Midwest, I can't swing a dead cat without hitting 15 Kador players and a Scorn player. So I need something that cracks high armor, lots of boxes. For a long time, that answer was Abby 2. So if I expect somewhere between 30 and 60% of the field to be armor spam, then Abby 2 can answer it. I played a little bit of Abby 2 and Mark 2, and by that I mean I played probably 150 games with her, I think. So I'm confident dropping her into a whole lot of stuff early on in the Mark III because she only got better. From there, step two is, okay, what is my – what I consider my main caster? What does that one lose to? I look at it and go, at the time, I need an answer to Krios 1, Sorsha 1, casters who can stationary me and shoot me to death. Well, Lilla 3 solves all of that. Turns out she still kind of does. Most recently, I was playing Kane 3, and I said I like Kane 3 into everything except Ghost Fleet. What kills Ghost Fleet? Kane 1. And built a list just to beat Kane 1. Then I'll take those two lists, and I will play them into some of my worst matchups. I will play I sat down with Gonzo and played three games into varieties of Kador with Kane 1 recently to see, okay, if I have to drop this into a presented pair of armor skew plus infantry skew, can this be a game for me? Can I drop this comfortably and survive? And then I flip through all those matchups. Once I got those two and said this is a workable pair, then I'll start fine-tuning. I'll start looking at things, and I'll say maybe I need the ninth charger instead of the junior because I'm never getting shot on my caster. And I'll just keep fine-tuning from that point up until one of two things happens. Either a significant meta shift occurs, or I find out that I completely missed something in my testing. We'll use Gateway Open as a recent example. I can test for Kane 1 and Kane 3 all I want until I play the one player who has a wall and a Kriya, and I go, oh, this is bad. This is really, really bad, and reevaluate my list pairs. Or I look at the board and I see twice as much terrain, three times as much terrain as I expected. And I go, let me rip this apart and rebuild with what I have in my bag. Not necessarily a solution I would recommend for everybody. In general, however, for most large tournaments, I've had to condition myself to only pack two lists because I'll second guess myself day one, even after playing it for the month leading up to it. And then to your last point, which is how do you avoid burnout? Step one, have multiple game nights per night. Step two, pick one of those nights to play your goofy lists. Now, for perspective, my idea of a goofy list is Haley 2 with five heavies. So I may not be the example you're looking for. Also, back when I was playing Magic the Gathering heavily, just for perspective, I had a 76-game winning streak with the exact same deck, and then I lost a match, and then I had another like 50-game winning streak with the same deck. So I might not be the best example of avoiding burnout because that was 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you answered that pretty well, though. That's basically I sort of thought, like, oh, I've got a corollary point. And you basically hit all the notes, which was, yeah, the you just sort of – you get a feel for the actual landscape. Yeah, and also ignore, like, podcasts are great to listen to for fun, but don't actually try to listen to them for, like, information. You just – it's not a good place to mine. Like, if you're trying to think about – podcasts are good for, like, when you're just starting the game and you just want to kind of get a feel for anything that might work so you don't just, like, get slaughtered on your first couple nights out. But other than that, you just need to feel – there's, like – I mean, we ran into this problem, which ourselves is that we let like national think tank talk kind of burn us out of like national meta, world global meta, and meta. And like we're constantly worrying about crap we never were going to see. Like, who gives a crap about Ghost Fleet if no one plays it in the Midwest? And who cares about 10 Marauders if no one actually plays it? So you play a few tournaments and just have fun. Like, don't even care. Like, play a few game nights and events with no expectation. You know, like, you're not even, you know that one day you want to be competitive, but you need to just sort of, you know, get a feel for the lay of the land first and then plan around that. Then you're like, Then by then you're going to have some like you're going to have some scalps that you want to collect. And you're like, I'm just going to hunt for that Scott Taylor guy, and I'm going to get that Brent Simon scalp, and you know, just really kind of get in the tank on specific people, and then you'll find that your results will be a lot better because you just know a lot more that's going on.
I kind of think the real value in podcasts, when I've listened to them in the past, is if somebody points out an interaction or some reason they put something in their list, you know, whatever it is, it will always cause me to have like a million thoughts, which is where it's sort of like the genesis of where a lot of my list design has come from in the past. Like a lot of times it'll just be thinking about a problem or somebody else causing me to think about it in a different way that I wasn't expecting. And I think that's where you get value from podcasts, is just listening to other people's ideas and that cause you to think in a little bit different way. But I would never take anything anybody says as like gospel, because I remember there's just so many things that have proven to be like not correct, you know, over time, from, you know, Will Pagani back in the day saying that pure blood warp wolves were unplayable trash, and Crump playing two in a list and completely taking him to the woodshed with him at Gen Con like 5 years ago. Like, there's too many different ways to like approach the game. And I think there's a difference between right and right for you. And, you have to recognize what's right for you. And then when you're listening to somebody else, they might be telling you something that's right for them. And I know that's not a popular opinion. Like a lot of people think that there's a way to solve for War Machine, but I don't really think that you can. Like, I don't think you can solve for it, which is sort of the beauty of the game.
So I'd like to build onto what you just said too, John. Something that I think is glossed over is, like you said, about we're discussing the most recent tournament was 2 weekends ago. By the time this podcast airs, Lock and Load will be a day in, maybe 2 days in. The meta described on basically any podcast is automatically going to be at least a week or two behind. The tactics and strategy don't change, though. I listened to the first 100 episodes of Muse while playing with Army Builders at the same time, because those were what, and that was when I was first getting competitive in the game too. So it was, how do these components go together? Why am I putting this jack with this caster with this support? And it's not because it's a great groundbreaking thing. It's because this fills a gap in my list and shores up a weakness, or this tactic that John described on how to use Enliven properly changes threat projection, and how do I control it? How do I soft control a zone as opposed to just throwing bodies into it? The tactics and the strategy that's described is always going to be useful. The Kane 3 specific army list may be completely worthless by the time this airs because of some new meta change. The idea of building a gun line to control part of a board or to drop a caster won't ever change in all likelihood. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing just to further build on the point a little bit is I like to take lessons I learned from playing other factions or other people's lists and apply them to my own list building. So one of the best things I ever did was we did an army swap at a Gen Con for a hardcore, which, by the way, is probably the worst time to swap an army is for a hardcore, just in case you're wondering. It makes it extremely challenging to play. But you just get so many lessons out of that that you can apply in different ways. So, like, one of the things that I took away was I was presented with a problem where I had a list with no troops. It was just all heavies and I think one light. Maybe two lights, something. and then they had Pain Givers. It was Scorn. And I ran into, like, just slews and slews of Weapon Masters. I played against, you know, Madrak 2, all the dudes. So they were all Weapon Masters. It was, like, 50 dudes. I played against Kreos 2's Theme Force. I played against Butcher, which was all the Exemplar. Butcher. I played against Butcher 2's Theme Force, which was all the Weapon Masters again. It was all the Doom Reavers.
Yeah.
And I had to use Pain Givers as a screen. And they were actually very effective at it, and they were very cheap. So I was like, I had to use them in a way that made me really appreciate, like, oh, is there a situation where I actually put my choir out front? So I started in different games, like, if the choir wasn't that important to my game plan, which was, like, basically denying shooting or denying spells, sometimes they would be handy in just, like, forcing people to kill them because they're very inexpensive and they suck up attacks. So it was kind of an eye-opening experience of, like, okay, how else can I use these pieces for a non-traditional role? And it was a really fun learning exercise. So I guess, long story short, I would say maybe jump in there and army swap with some people and then start solving problems in ways that you wouldn't expect.
So I've kind of found myself doing that a little bit, especially with, like, the Krill Stone. Like, there's a lot of times my Krill Stone's out front, similar to how you're playing your choir. Like, there's a lot of times my Krill Stone goes out front because it just makes sense for a couple of Krill Stone members to die instead of a heavy or whatnot. But you're absolutely right, because I have found that since I started looking at problems from different lenses to try and find different ways to fix them, my game has gotten better. Because right now, I think it's safe to say, maybe Brent could back me up if it's necessary, but I'm kind of like that traditional three and X or X and one player. Like, I'll pick up my first loss in, like, round three. And then from there, like, it's really like from there, you're pretty much out of it if you're picking up your loss in the middle or late rounds. I feel like a lot of times when I'm picking up that X and one record, I feel like a lot of times it's not because my primary list isn't, I'm not comfortable with my primary, because I'll look at things like, like my Doomshaper 3 list. That Doomshaper 3 list is exceptionally strong. I'm very comfortable with it. I've played it into a wide variety of matchups. But when I shift gears, I look at my alt list, and I'm still struggling to figure out what my off list needs to be with Doomshaper 3. And I think part of that is because, like, maybe there's some rose-colored glasses because I just love Doomshaper 3 so much, so I'm not looking at his bad matchups as much. But I think a lot of it, too, is there's enough things that can be problematic that I'm having trouble isolating exactly what Warlock is going to fix that problem. Because if I look at it from Ghost Fleet, which is in my area, if I want to go to a local event, like, I have to have a plan for Ghost Fleet because there's an exceptionally good Ghost Fleet player in Springdale that I'm going to have to deal with. But I'm also going to have to deal with, there's the potential I'm going to have to deal with Legion of Steel and Kador. There's the potential, like, and there's a lot of different things. So I'm having trouble isolating what that off list is and then knowing how to keep myself in the gears to play that off list as much as I can, even into those bad matchups. And I think that's kind of where I'm at. So that's where the questions about burnout. I do really love the feedback about playing, like, my goofy or my off list and stuff, because I do have, like, the silly Harkovich with, like, 8 destroyers list or 7 destroyers or whatever, because it's funny and it's hilarious and, like, the whole world explodes and it's super fun to play. But it's good feedback to know that it's okay to play that while I'm still trying to develop those, you know, those really tight tournament skills.
One thing, I guess, Scott, the other thing I wanted to point out, I was thinking about this when a point earlier was you were talking about being an X and one player. I'm not sure a lot of people understand the difference between being X and one and losing your first round and being X and one and losing the fourth round or the fifth round. You have a significantly different road. So, like, you can be making progress and not even realize you're making progress because it won't be reflected in your record. So if you're an X and one player and you typically lose round one or round two, and then you kind of graduate to being a player that typically doesn't lose until round four or five, like, that's a ton of progress that wouldn't necessarily show up in your record, right? Because the later you lose in a tournament, the higher caliber of a road you typically have hit. It's not always the case. But you know, if you lose round one, round two, you're going to be paired against an X and one player, an O and one player. Round you know, the round after that, round three, you're going to play against somebody that is, you know, 1-1 at best. You know, whereas if you win every round, you're playing against somebody that's undefeated every round until you lose. So,
so yeah, and I think that's, I think maybe that's where, when we talk about climbing the mountain, I actually feel like that's where the granularity in climbing the mountain is. At least I feel like that's an accurate statement. I know Brent and I play in a lot of the same events. He's seen my tournament performance for all the good and sometimes the not so good that comes with it. And but you're right though. That's a really hard mountain to climb. And on top of that too, when I'm talking about burnout, it's maybe not necessarily just playing the same list over and over. And this is, I think you're right, John. I think this is a better way to say it. It's not necessarily just playing the same list over and over. It's playing the same list over and over and then feeling like, you know, you're progressing instead of progressing like those first couple of miles after you play like the list, like for the 10th time or something, you're progressing inches now. And so even though you like the skills that you're learning are more finite and ultimately probably more influential in whether or not you win the game, it still feels like you're just crawling forward because you're playing so hard to like get that nth degree and like you're still losing by those inches. You know what I mean? And so that's more to the point. So that's a better way of saying it.
Yeah. Playing the same list over and over, it can be tough for other reasons too, because your opponents, like, so say your local meta, like for me, it would be like John, Nick, and Josh would be my primary three opponents. If I'm like, I want to make Marauders viable, so I want to just do this. Eventually, like, they're going to tech more and more and more to deal with me, and my games will get harder and harder. So rather than me getting better, I'm actually going to be having a harder and harder and harder and harder time, and then having to play through that, like, just sticking to it, despite the fact that I'm actually going backwards, essentially, because everybody else is moving up. But you'll be better prepared for games you have to eke out that are going to be borderline because of that. But that's where the real value comes in. I think the problem with War Machine for a lot of players is that they are looking for these like silver bullet. Like, players are so obsessed with this like 80-20 concept where there's like, I'm just going to go in and just get this matchup that's like an auto win for me. Why would you even play a game? Like, why would that be an interesting game that you would even want to pursue buying models for if it was like,
there are
in the list building phase?
So few matchups that are that one-sided anyway.
Yeah, but people just have this fantasy that there's like a tier list out there that's just spammy and does something stupid, and like, I'll just beat. And the more people play, the more that you have there. You know, everybody's adapted to that list, and all of a sudden, you know, I think you see people that have to buy a new army list every 2 weeks because they're trying to like chase. They're trying to be on the bleeding edge of that curve, and like. There's a value to just being goddamn good at the game and, like, you know, playing through matchups that aren't good for you and still winning. And
there's an old saying that's something like I don't remember exactly how it went, but something to the effect of, he spent his entire life looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but he never stayed looking in the same place long enough to find it. And that's just an axiom that is very true in War Machine. Like, it's the other thing that's really hard about War Machine is that you get like data that is not at all conclusive, but it feeds into your confirmation bias. So you might lose like four times in a row with a really good list, but you just had bad dice, or you made a catastrophic mistake that you learned from, but then you falsely equate it to the list being bad versus equating it to like actually what happened, you know, like, oh, well, I think the list is actually. And then you give up, you know, and you don't stick with something long enough to tweak it and make it good. Or you change it too fast, you know.
There was a thing on Blizzard about that, but the War Machine equivalent would be, if you lose a game with your army, the best thing you could do would be either A, change 20% of it, or B, get on the internet and do significant research, or C, play 10 more games. The answer is always play 10 more games with your list. I'm not saying that there's never something you should change, but you're 100% right, John. All too often people go, oh, well, this thing cost me the game or didn't win me the game, so I need to change it out. Usually it's not the thing that cost you the game. It's you that cost you the game, and the thing was probably fine. That sounded really harsh, didn't it?
No, not at all. It's 100% true. Every game of War Machine that I've ever lost has been my fault. I'm pretty sure. Like, I may not admit it at the time. Like, I will definitely go straight to cognitive dissonance and blame dice, blame the fact that I'm tired, blame that I'm hungry. But I think...
You had a lot of bad matchups.
Well, yeah, typically. Usually I win those, though. But, I'm kidding. The truth of the matter is I can look back on every game that I've lost of War Machine and point out the things that I could have done to increase my odds of winning. And I can literally say, like, if I've had this discussion before, and I don't mean to get, like, too soapboxy, but people will come to you and say, I think I played that game perfectly, and then I lost. And I just have to really try not to laugh at them, because I've played probably thousands of games of War Machine, I'm going to guess, and I've never played a perfect one. It's too hard. Like, there's mm-hmm. there's too many ways to, like, misposition by a few centimeters or not have considered something, or, you know, you also, it's a game of imperfect information. So sure, you could play optimally if you knew what all your dice rolls were going to be, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't. So sometimes you over allocate, sometimes you under allocate. And sure, math says that, you know, this should happen, but it doesn't mean it's going to. And so I don't know. I guess what I'm really trying to get at is, War Machine is it's always good to reflect. Like, so one of the things that was really difficult for me to learn early was that sometimes it's more important to make sure something happens in the game and the math be damned. So, like, you know that on average my avatar is going to wreck this other heavy, right? But I need that heavy to die. So I will allocate not only the avatar, but I'll also make sure that I have set up other redundant parts to make sure that that happens, to the sacrifice of potentially doing more work in the game, because I need to make sure that the goals are happening in the game that are most important. And it's a lot of times when I've lost at War Machine, it's been basically because I've tried to be greedy, where I've tried to do too much or accomplish too much in a turn. Like, War Machine is kind of a slow game. I don't know. I don't know what I was trying to get at, but...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's... Actually, I've got a local who... Probably 90% of his losses are where he's tried to go and do work with his caster directly in Melee. And while a Krix caster in Melee sounds like a good thing, if it's like a Skari one, if that fails, you just lost the game entirely. Versus if you just take three more turns to guarantee win the game. And I see that a lot on a lot of people. They go, they feel like they're going to lose the game, so they overcommit resources like their caster and try too hard to catch back up without realizing they could just do like you said, send two jacks in, write off one of them, and the next turn I'm in such a much better position.
Yeah. I guess what I was really trying to get at is reflecting on the game, like I always find lots of things that I could have done better. And I think, Scott, that's what I want to impart to you more than anything is reflection on the games that you've played. Like, you get so much more value out of them if you just really, really, really actually think about where are the points that I could have done something better. And what would that have yielded? Like, would it have given me a better chance to win?
That's actually been like a crusade of mine for a little bit, to try and learn. And I think there's even challenges inside of that, to be completely transparent. Because, like, there's some times where you're just like, what do you mean a Maul or a Madrak couldn't kill a single Charger? Are you serious? Like, really? Really? And so, like, you kind of get stuck into that, like, cycle of you're like, well, what? How did this not happen? And so, like, it blocks you from seeing the game. It blocks you from being able to see the game. Because, again, dissonance, right? So I look at the dice, and I'm like, oh, well, that's what happened. And it stops you from being able to see the game for what it is and going, like, well, okay, but what happened in the game to where I had to engage my Warlock to kill a charger. Like, where did this game go so bad or so wrong that that's what had to happen? And if it wasn't the wrong play and it was the right play, was there anything I could do to ensure his success? Was there the ability to knock down the charger? Was there the ability to, you know, and whatever the case may be. I mean, there's a thousand scenarios to fit. So it's actually been a challenge. Like, that's been something I've been trying to do is, like, look, and what I've been doing is I'll ask my opponent to 360 me, which is, like, I'll look over my opponent and be like, okay, what did I do well? What did I not do well? Right? And so, like, I played a couple of test games last Monday after we got done on the podcast. I played against the Children of the Dragon, and he was trying out the new heavies that come in it. And we were kind of talking about the game. We're like, you know what? Like, we were talking about it afterwards. Like, I think I committed conquest way too early. And so we kind of talked about it, and we came to that conclusion. And it's kind of surprising, a little not-so-pro tip, because I'm not a pro, but a little tip to anybody who's listening. It's kind of surprising when you can look at yourself, and when someone says, I think you committed the conquest too early, and then you kind of think to yourself, like, well, no, I really didn't. Because, and then you just stop yourself from making all of those excuses, and then you just think about it logically, and you're like, you know what, I think you're right. And it's almost like this little light bulb moment that comes on because you're like, ooh, yeah, yeah, that's probably what got him killed. You know, like, I committed him and I didn't have anything else there, or whatever the case may be. Like, and but it's a challenge. So when you guys are looking at a loss, like, do you guys have any, like, specific things that you hunt for? I know Brent, well, according to the last three major tournaments that happened, Brent just doesn't lose games. But if he did, what things does Brent look for? What things does Nigel or John look for when you guys are like, okay, well, that game didn't go according to plan? Where, I guess, like, what are your shatter points? What are your breaking points that you look for that help you separate, like, your emotion from the game and just looking at it strictly as facts and then being able to learn it?
Step one for me is I almost never analyze it right then because I'll be overly angry at myself at that point. I always try to look at it the next day or later that night. That happened at the first Masters Heat at Gateway when I lost to a double Axiom list by Mark Brandt, and I just immediately knee-jerk said, well, I can't win this. I couldn't have won this matchup. The next day I started thinking it through, and I went, well, if I'd done this and this and this and sacrificed a third of my army, I would have gotten 80% of his over two turns, and you win. When you start trading a third of your army for 80% of theirs, it turns out you probably could win that matchup.
Sorry to interrupt you, Brett. One of my favorite stories of that is, if you ever heard Chandler talk about his WTC matchup where he got paired against, he's playing Protectorate, and he got paired into Mercs, and he miscalled the matchup. He thought he was going to be playing, I don't remember what the other list was, but he actually ended up playing into Bart. And Bart with a Galleon is a very difficult nut for Protectorate to crack. And he was playing Sevi 2. So literally his entire game plan was, well, I'm going to have Sevi 2, like, basically cast Creator's Might, and then I'm going to one round a Galleon. And that's the only way I can win this game. And so he played the entire game setting that up. And then he one-rounded the Galleon with Sevi 2, which mathematically actually is pretty average because he's, you know, blessed. And then he just rolls a ton of dice. And so that's how the game went down, and that's how he won. But I was just like, I'm not sure I could have come up with that plan where, you know, my whole thing is, like, I'm going to get my caster on their Colossal, and then I'm going to one-round it, and I'm going to play the game to set that up.
So let me actually touch on that using literally probably your favorite article ever. It's an ancient Magic the Gathering article called Who's the Beatdown?
Yeah.
It's – the gist of it is you may think – you may go into a matchup and you may be playing Ghost Fleet. Ghost Fleet's actually a really good example right now. And you may be thinking that I'm playing Ghost Fleet. I'm just going to knock their caster down and shoot them to death. Well, that works up until you draw Kingmakers and you can't shoot their caster because they're knocked down. You have to start looking at it as, am I playing a gun line? Am I playing – do I need to go into my melee with my army? do I need to just throw my entire army away for scenario? And Scott, I can't remember if you were at the Springdale qualifier. I had an opponent who had Gators with rerolls into Fianna 2, which is actually a fairly solid matchup for him. My entire game plan from turn one, though, was I'm going to win this on scenario. I had a nice forest to hide behind and dominate a flag, and that's what I'm going to do. And I probably could have played a stronger attrition game, but literally my entire game plan was you're not going to get anything within 4 inches of this flag. I'm going to win that way. And I saw when we did the matchup that that's what I needed to do to win, and fortunately it worked out. A lot of that comes down to evaluating on the fly what your army is actually going to do that game. And I'm positive John and Nigel and I have dozens of examples where we could throw out of games where that's come up.
I think what it really boils down to is reps. Once you've played a lot of War Machine, you sort of understand how the game works just on a fundamental level. And you only get that with reps. I remember talking to Matt O'Reilly, who was a very good player back at the beginning of Mark II and at the end of Mark I. He's a very well-known player. He doesn't play anymore. But we were just sort of talking about, like, good competitive War Machine players and sort of the arc that they go through. And he's like, basically, it's 2 years before they even start, have learned enough about the game to where they can compete. And that means, like, where they could have a shot of, like, going X and 1 or giving a good game to a really experienced player. And I'm like, gosh, 2 years, that's a long time. And I think the learning curve has actually gone out some for that, in that there's just more stuff. So, you know, this was 6 years ago. Was that when Mark II came out? 5 years ago? 6 years ago?
More than that.
Yeah, 7 years ago maybe. So
for me, an example of this, it's kind of going the opposite way. But I talked on this podcast like a year ago about this notion that you have to desensitize, and this was a sportsmanship discussion, but you needed to desensitize yourself to the feeling of loss, the anxiety of loss, whatever. Like, you eventually, it's kind of like Resident Evil, Biohazard, super scary, and it's like really tilting. And eventually you'll desensitize yourself to, like, the surprise and the tension of it. And you'll get to the point where you're just, like, straight stabbing dudes. Like, you become a ninja master. And, like, most of your kills are just, like, you know, expertly, sticking in, stabbing him with the knife, and then backing up. And then, you know, just avoiding. You become comfortable with the game, and it's no longer, it, like, demystifies the experience. Which is good. It's what you want. That's where you want to be. So you can properly sort of enjoy, like, you know, it's more about you sort of understand that it's just your skill, and then this, like, nebulous stuff that makes you uncomfortable is gone. And for me, then, War Machine, that translates into the re-rack, like, the ultimate. There is a lot to be said. Like, you're at a tournament, you don't get to re-rack against a tournament player, so you do have to have, like, the ability to make that call. But for me, where it gives me that library, that database in my back of my head, is the re-rack, which is, I'm not worried about losing because I lose all the time because I'm playing in a terrible matchups. So it's always like my practice angle. And if I lose, I'll re-rack and I'll re-rack again. Like, me and Josh have had nights where I played like Zirkova 1 into Pirates, you know, 4 times in a row because I was like, I'm positive I can make this work. Like, you know, and there's a point where you're just like, I'm not worried about losing. It's just a thing. It's just a byproduct of it's losing is no different than sweat. It's just a byproduct of the exercise, and I'm not afraid of it. It doesn't bother me. I enjoy it. And part of the process for me then is, you know, it's the same. You want that, like, workout pain of, you know, your muscles should be sore. It's sort of the same thing. You know, it's working, you know, when you are suffering those losses because you're learning a lot. But re-rack for me, where it's gone the other way, you get smart enough to know. Because this is rare for me when you play a game. I played Kray. I was positive that Kray was like a ball buster. I was like, this Kray is going to take over the meta. And I played him into Gatsby 2. And this is like current crappy Gatsby 2. So I was like, I thought I was like heavily advantaged because Gatsby 2 is nerfed into Oblivion and Crix players hate him. and whatever. And Finken wrecked, like, he beat me. The game, okay, sorry, the game was pretty close, but I knew the matchup, and so I did all these, like, Kobayashi Maru techniques to, like, I maxed out everything. Like, I bob and weaved, I ducked in and out, I got all these crazy, like, tactics off, and he still beat me by just, like, feeding and killing my caster. Like, I couldn't stop it. And I was like, let's re-rack. I was just, my instinct was, I'm a better player than this. Let's re-rack. And it went the other way. Finken learned more about the matchup than I did. and he slaughtered me. It was like, he beat the Kray right out. Like, okay, maybe Kray's not going to be, like, the world beater, you know. So the re-rack gives you that ammo. But at a tournament, you know, when I played that first game, it was actually incredibly close because neither of us had played that matchup before. But I had a library of game experience that made it much more playable, which then on replay we learned is like, okay, no, it's just a stupid matchup. I shouldn't have even been in there.
Yeah, War Machine, I guess that's what I want to stress, is it's just a beautiful game. It is so good when you get to explore it. Like, the exploration of War Machine is one of the most fun journeys that I've ever done. Like, I loved every minute of it. And there's just so much to think about. And there's so many, oh, God. There's just so many things to think about. It's not just list build. It's like, how do you play certain pieces? And what do you do in certain matchups? And how do you solve X problems? And how do you build a list pair that, you know, it's never ending. So it's I think, an endeavor that's worth following just for the journey.
And the people.
Yep.
Present company excluded.
Man. I mean, I'm going to get, you know, super sappy here, but if it wasn't for people like y'all and, you know, 4 dozen other people I see only at conventions, I'd probably go back to playing a different game.
You mean like
40K? I have met... probably something I could, Magic or Hearthstone, something I can do for my house. In all of Mark II, I met one person in all of Mark II I would rather never play again. And no one in Mark III, and no one in Mark I. And coming from a background playing Magic and Warhammer and 40K, that is insanely good percentage wise. The community is actually, even the saltiest members of the community, and we both know there's a lot of, well, there's not a lot of salty members. There's a lot of people who make up for it in volume of salt out of that specific person.
Mm.
But even them, they're great people to hang around with usually and see at the conventions and socialize with.
Yeah, I think my whole career of War Machine, there's probably 3 people that I would count as not wanting to ever play again. And one of those people is off that list. Like, one of those people, if you play long enough, everybody grows and evolves and adapts. And you're like, oh, they're actually super cool. And then you change your mind on them. But, you know, so it's like, yeah, overall, yeah. And also having played a lot of other games recently in other game systems. Yeah, it's hit or miss, I guess. I was going to say that I think it's like War Machine's exceptional in that regard. But I guess, I don't know. I guess it is. As an Infinity player, I've been in like 3 tournaments in the last like 3 months. And one of those tournaments, I think it was like a 6-round event. I think 4 of those games, I wouldn't want to play against that person ever again, which is a pretty high average of like, oh, that's a lot of negative play experiences. But I've been to more events to know that that's actually sort of a aberration, you know, for the community. Like, a lot of gamers are gamers, so, you know.
I think I see, like, we've been playing Batman, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The crew that we're going to be playing Batman with is basically everybody that I met in War Machine.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for that because I like having reasons to socialize with that community, which is this, like, sort of a little bit older, little more mature gamer. Like, War Machine's got a really interesting crowd that I really appreciate. So.
All I can say is War Machine Weekend is the only national convention I can go to where I can leave my tablet, wallet, $1,000 worth of fully painted models on a tray, walk away, come back 6 hours later, no one's touched it. Or if they have touched it, they moved it to the side so they could play a game on the table, and they will stand there and wait for me till I get back to say, hey, I moved your stuff. I hope you're not upset. Like, it's the only place in the world where that would happen.
Yeah.
And they'll probably give you alcohol when you come back to make sure you're not upset.
Yeah, well, absolutely. They'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, bro. Here's a beer.
My counter to that is at the ATC, me, Keith, and I think one other person on the team, but it might have just been me and Keith, somebody literally came and swiped all of our AoEs. Yeah. And that was pretty tilting because we, like, left our armies out. And somebody just, like, walked by and just, like, whoop, that's my AoE. That's my AoE. And so then we had no AoEs for the rest of the weekend.
Oh, that was probably Floridians, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
just kidding. Those guys aren't on the cast anymore, so it's actually wasted.
Luckily, I didn't leave my tablet out because holy crap.
Yeah. I will say, Scott, you're generally right. The War Machine community, like, if you were to compare it to a community like, say, Magic the Gathering, if you left your deck box on a table, chances are it's gone. Like, they're just worth too much money.
Yeah, and I would not leave my tablet out around Nigel. I learned that lesson once.
Yeah, I will smash it.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
Nigel, smash.
That was awesome. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I love Brenton Payne. That's, you know.
It's a sort of Revenge of the Nerds thing.
Yeah.
It's like, nerds. And I just bullied Brent.
Oh, man. Brent, are you going to come up for another weekend sometime? Why don't you bring Scott with you, and I'll play some War Machine with you guys.
School starts in August, and I'll be in Columbia again, so I'll come up those weekends.
All right.
Name the time. Get some time off, and I'll head up too.
Cool. Yeah, we'll just have a War Machine boot camp. We'll play some War Machine. We'll make Scott a better player by showing him what not to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been trying to do that, actually. He keeps ducking, actually. Do you still have...
What?
You still have those spare ducks, John? Because there may be a new person trying to get the title. Brent
Simon, don't you even do that.
Scott, if you want to get better, I would recommend that you do play those games. Like I would. Yeah, I know Brent's a lot better than you, and you're going to lose. But it's good for you, buddy. So just hang in there.
Oh, God, what's happening to me?
Yeah, also, Jesse Harcheck actually messaged me literally like a week and a half ago about... he's like, I don't know if you're interested, but if you need more duck whistles... I know where to get more. And
well,
so
see,
like,
now there.
There now what?
There could be something there. There could be something there.
Hey, for the record, I was never a ducker. I played more games with more people than anybody else on this cast.
You realize all I can think of right now is Scott's head photoshopped on a rubber duck on a zone, right?
Well, Brent,
no, we've already gone the zone route. We don't need to go another zone route.
No,
I think like every year there's a new zone.
Yeah, next year will probably be a Brent Simon special, though.
Well, I don't know, like a rubber ducky in the bathtub. You just...
Yeah.
I will do my best to make next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we're going to try to move it because Memorial Weekend was not popular. It's popular with like people who don't have families, and it's not popular people do. And we'd rather everybody just be able to show up, so...
Yeah.
We'll move it a week one way or the other, like one direction or the other.
Yeah, or 2 weeks. We'll see how the schedule works out.
Yep. We want to make sure that it's after school's out for the college kids and then far enough away from lock and load. But I think they've bumped their
They're way further into July, at least this year. Yeah. So that might work out pretty well.
Hmm.
John, we're approaching your witching hour. Just as a heads up.
Yep, I got 10 minutes. So I think this has been a really, really good discussion. I appreciate you guys. I actually just want to say this. I appreciate you guys jumping on the last few weeks to help us out because we've been having trouble with scheduling, and it's making us more consistent, so that's great.
It's a lot of fun, to be honest. It really is. Plus, y'all really helped me out on the first, 6 years. I feel I should probably give back a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's how we look at it, you owe us.
Yeah, so next week Nigel and I won't be here, but you guys will. I kid.
No, it's great having you guys on. I mean, part of the fruits of the whole like community is that you end up just making these awesome friends who you can like call, and this has been a revelation for us because everybody, in addition to scheduling problems, we just have people who just aren't into it right now, and it's hard to, like, muster up motivation to talk about it, especially, like, if not everybody's in it or whatever. Then we just realized, like, hey, we have, like, all these friends who play it constantly. Like, let's just call them up. Like, you know, it's not like the friendship's not entirely based. If it's, like, a Venn diagram, it's not 100% based on the War Machine overlap. So, you know, it's been awesome to be able to call you guys. And then the best part is, like, again, we had Clinton Mayhew on. Yeah, we just... We could literally call like 10 different people a week, like it's, and then do that with no repeats for like a year. Like there's so many people in the community that you can, but to have you guys, you know, make yourselves available to us is really awesome. So,
and you guys also like are invested in the game, and if I'm being honest, you're helping me get through some of my malaise. So I thank you for that. I really do. So
good. I mean. I'm looking forward to the day when you're kicking the hell out of me again.
Well, I don't know that that's ever going to happen because I think you've already passed where I've ever been. So you're going to have to slip a lot in order for that to become a reality.
You know. Go ahead, Scott.
I just wanted to say I was talking to Nigel about this. Like, the ability to be a part of the Muse on Muse podcast is actually. Like, I feel like at some level, like, I'm giving back. Like, because I started listening around, like, episode 26, 27, or 36, 37, somewhere in that area. And when I started listening, like, I got, like, all these really cool ideas, and it sounded, like, super fun. So it really kind of helped draw me into the game quite a bit. And so for as long as I've been playing, Muse has always kind of been at the center of my game, which is why I'm literally, like, a walking advertisement. Like, you can look at my table. At any table I've played at, and it's like a walking advertisement for Muse on Minis products, right? Because it's just, I've always supported it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to be a part of that, at least in some small way, to be able to kind of like, even if I'm only facilitating a conversation or being used as proxy to do so, like it's still really cool to kind of be able to give that back a little bit, to give that back a little bit to the community. Like, because that's like, and it's really cool to be a part of. So, like, it goes both ways. Like, you say, like, we're helping you with your malaise with the game. But you're, in a lot of ways, it's also helping me develop, like, a stronger understanding and a stronger, like, path of progression. So, like, it's a mutually beneficial thing. So, it's actually super cool. So, don't think it's just one-sided. Like, I am extremely honored to be on the Muse on Minis podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, did we just become best friends?
Scott, I think you dramatically underestimate the value of facilitating conversation. It helps get new players more into the game more than just about anything else, outside of maybe showing them some tricks. That it's a super useful thing, in my opinion, at least. John, I had two questions for you.
God damn it, Brandon.
Yes, I love it.
Question one, Batman or Guild Ball, which is better to pick up as a side game currently?
That's tough.
No, I think, well... Okay, it is technically tough, because in my Nigel vision, I heard Infinity and Batman.
I'm not getting into Infinity. It was a bit too high a price point for a side game for me, and a bit too fiddly.
I won't even bother countering that point, but it is fiddly. I agree with you on the fiddly. Cost-wise, it's fantastic. Batman is pretty spectacular. Guild Ball's the cheapest, though. Guild Ball's by far the cheapest because you don't have to pay a license fee when you buy your models. Knight models are generally $20 per blister of one guy. And so there's a little bit of a sticker shock because you're like, oh, my gang's only 11 dudes, but then you're paying, you know, $300. And you're like, oh, what happened?
Here's how I'll answer that. It depends on what you want, Brent. So I think that Guild Ball is a tighter, better competitive game. I think Batman is in some ways more fun. Like I have more fun thinking about Batman than I do about Guild, because Guild Ball
toss cars.
What's that?
You can just toss cars and roll dice.
Oh, not necessarily. No, Batman is well, part of it is the fluff, right? You get to play with the superheroes that you love or the villains that you love, and then the other part of it is there's so much in Batman. So in a lot of ways, I would say that Batman's sort of opposite to Guild Ball, and that Guild Ball is a very streamlined, very, very, very good competitive game. Batman is very rich. There's just so many nooks and crannies to explore and to think about and try and mess with. So I think I would probably, at least for me, I would say Batman right now. If you want that experience, if you want an exploration experience, if you want a really good, tight game that you want the competition experience, I would say Guild Ball.
Yeah, that's why I like lean towards Batman for
there's
you.
There's also 40K, but I've been burned so hard, but maybe in a couple years.
The nice thing about Batman is it's also not serious. Guild Ball is very crunchy and meticulous, and it's a little bit of a rabbit hole. Like, the learning curve on Guild Ball is very similar to War Machine, despite it being a smaller game. Whereas with Batman, the learning curve is also large, but it's mostly because there's just so many gall darn rules. But the game is it's a little more whimsical, so you don't have to. If War Machine is your main line, like heroin, and you're just looking for something to take the edge off, you know, Batman 100% fits that role. And then also with Batman, Guild Ball and War Machine has a lot of overlap, which is that it's like 2D terrain. The experience is like, you know, it is what it is. It's great because you're sort of getting this like two-dimensional, almost like a digital environment, tight rules set. Batman's so immersive with like the 3D terrain, and you're in back alleys, and you're walking up scaffolds, and so you get like that infinity level of detail with just like grappling, hooking up buildings and stuff. Oh my god, yeah, it's so wildly imaginative as you sort of create that narrative in your head as it plays out, and then the scenarios are so wacky, and like there's so many gangs to choose from, and if you like comics at all, it's 100% triples the value.
One day you ought to come by and actually see my game room here. That's just all there is to it.
Does that mean we have to go to Arkansas?
The two full bookshelves. I've got spare rooms to seat 11 people here. So, you know, we have qualifiers.
But it is apparently in Arkansas, right? No?
Ah, John.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
You're not wrong, John. But his game room is super sweet. His game room is super sweet.
You should talk to Carl and see if he can get a qualifier at your house.
I will make you a promise. If you come down and visit, I will take you to a restaurant that's not inside a grocery store.
Which one, Brian?
Is that a shot?
No. The first place they took me to in Des Moines was a restaurant inside Hy-Vee.
Oh, jeez.
Wait. Really?
Who did that? It wasn't me.
You and Nigel both. And you all were like, let's check out the Hy-Vee buffet. And I'm like, okay, I've never gone to the one across the street from me, but sure.
Well, we didn't know that I had to like give you the Anthony Bourdain experience.
Diners, drive-ins, and dives.
The least you could have done was taken him to Taco Apocalypse, which, by the way, the next time I'm in Des Moines, I don't care if we have to leave a tournament early. We're going to Taco Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. Have you even been to Blaze yet?
Oh, Blaze is good, too.
Is that the place where you make your own pizza?
Yeah.
Yeah, that place is sweet.
Oh, I love Blaze more than Taco Apocalypse.
What?
Yep, it's true.
See the side
discussion? Nigel, okay.
Why do you... No. Why do you ask questions like that? Like,
okay, I'm sorry. That
anyway,
was really bad.
I had one other thing for you.
All right.
Because it's the 4th of July. John!
God damn it. All right. Go ahead.
John, what did the pirates do for the 4th of July?
What did the pirate do for the 4th
of July?
Oh god, it's so bad.
That one is bad.
It's so bad it hurts.
Yeah.
It's so good and so bad it hurts all at the same time.
That was like the Colin fart of jokes.
Like, how did I get two pirate jokes in this? This is terrible.
You complained that you weren't getting enough.
I did not complain I wasn't getting enough. I said if you're going to do them, do good jokes.
Rolling on the field.
Oh no, it definitely qualified and was amazing, so I'll allow it.
All right.
I just want to say my life is complete now that John got two pirate jokes in the same cast.
Yeah, so that bit can be done. That's fine. Brent, did I answer your question in the way you wanted it answered as far as Batman versus Gilball?
Like, yeah.
Okay. Because it's actually a very tricky, difficult question.
No, I was actually just curious. I really like the Batman minis. And honestly, it may come down to what everyone else around me is playing, much like any other game.
I was going to say you might want to jump in on Batman if you're going to be like in our neck of the Midwest, because I think it's going to take off based on what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of people that are pretty interested in like the Omaha, Minneapolis, Des Moines.
Yeah, we have a tournament this Sunday that we're going to in Omaha that we're bringing 8 people in the van. We just had a weekend where we literally played, like, it was almost like a pool hall where we just, like, ram-jammed games. You know, like, we played, like, 3 games on Friday, 6 games on Saturday, 2 games on Sunday, whatever.
And those things have not happened for us.
What's that?
So, like, an average practice weekend for me.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of my friends years back when I was playing 40K said the truest thing. You know what the best miniatures game on the market is?
Whatever your friends are playing. That's a good answer. I like it. Well, I think we need to wrap it up unless you guys have anything else you want to cover.
1, 2, 3, not it on editing.
Not it. Scott.
Scott, you're too slow.
Send me the link and I'll get started.
Oh, my God. I don't know if...
Scott's too earnest. Actually just unfortunate. Like,
it is unfortunate. Yeah. He is very earnest and... Yeah, too nice.
Yeah.
You're way too nice, Scott. If you're going to hang out with us, you're going to have to, like, really develop your asshole.
Yeah, you need to, like, basically be like, oh, let me see if Jeremy Gregg's available this weekend.
This is the other thing I could teach
Brent
you.
Brent knows I can be mean. Brent no, has can't. Seen me mean.
No, you can't.
I was madder than a hornet in a whirlwind in that game versus Harbinger.
A hornet in a whirlwind. Oh, my God. My life is complete. I love it.
I don't remember who you were playing.
Rich. I was playing Richard.
You're too nice guy. I will fix that for you if you ever make a practice session.
I missed one practice session because you didn't answer your phone, and I got halfway to Springdale, and I still couldn't get a hold of you, so I turned around and went home because it's still 1:15 for me.
Sounds like savage ducking to me.
When you tell me you're going to come down, I'm not going to abandon my friend. I will cancel all my plans for the night to make sure I'm available for you.
I think you guys should solve this with like
that's a hell of a guilt trip, actually.
Like a Jell-O wrestling match or something.
Oh God, no! You've seen me.
Yeah, no. That's why I want to see it. All right.
It would literally be that scene out of Fight Club.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Muse on Minis. This has been John.
Nigel.
Scott.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. You guys both get an F. Thanks again.
I get an F. What did I do?
You guys both talked over each other. You literally, yeah.
Did we? Because it sounded clear on my end.
Oh, it did? No, we just heard you. We heard you guys at the same time.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Like, yeah, no, it's just
our listeners have come to expect terrible.
We were high-stepping the end zone, and then Don Beebe knocked
the
football.
We are the backups. I mean, they shouldn't expect a whole lot out of me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we are strictly Muse Team Bravo at this point. Like, we're Muse Podcast Bravo.
You guys are definitely alpha.
Charlie?
Have you listened to our podcast lately? You guys totally
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. Get out of here.
I've listened to every episode of Muse on Minis ever produced.
No, you haven't, because there's a couple that never saw the light of day. I promise.
I'm sure there are a couple. Like, I've listened to everyone that made the website. I'll put it that way.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm just being a dick.
I've listened to all of them except the last two that have been published.
Oh, you don't want to hear yourself talk?
I hate to.
All right, guys, I got to run. I've got to get to fireworks. Peace and harmony. Love you both, and we'll talk to you soon. Hey, did you enjoy the steak we went out for?
I loved the steak we went out for.
Right? Not half bad.
At the Iowa B Steakhouse?
We did. Yeah, during MomCon. I took the Swede, Tom Guan, Orungi, and, oh, yeah, a Canadian. We had quite the international house of pancakes going on at Iowa B Steakhouse.
Wait a minute. I show up to MomCon, get trolled for 72 hours straight, and that wasn't even worth a burger, and you take these guys out for steak?
Oh, I didn't pay. I just took them with.
Oh.
Trust me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, damn it.
And you could definitely have come with. You know, if you had, like, mentioned that you wanted to hang out or have a meal, I probably would have been like, hey, come with us. But since, you know, you never, like, made me feel like you wanted to hang out, I just didn't want to, like, impose. So.
I never made you.
It's fine, Scott. It's fine. Okay. Don't worry about it. Scott, it's water under the bridge. We're still friends. I still love you. But next time you're, like, in my neck of the woods, you know, if you wanted to invest a little bit of your time with me, I would appreciate it.
I promise, Scott, he didn't say anything like, quick, we got to leave the hotel before Scott sees me.
No, that's actually true. That did not happen. That's 100%
true. Sure. Mm-hmm. You're right. It did not happen. How do you wink on Skype?
I don't know how you wink on Skype, but I feel you, buddy. We're good.
Yeah. You do like a, do you just go, wink, wink, wink.
All right. You can never do that again, please.
Why can't what?
When you're right next to me.
No, what we need is the little sound bite where, like, the exclamation point pops up above somebody's head in Metal Gear, right? Like that ring. Like, that's what we need. That's a wink.
Well, we need Mahu to simulate that by just screaming.
Yeah. Like a madman from
screeching,
Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect.
Well, I am good at screeching.
All right. What War Machine topics do you guys want to talk about tonight? Is there anything news and announcement-wise that we need to bring up?
If it's not Sweet Gore Shade 4 Dojo, I'm not even listening to it. Not listening to the episode at all.
I mean, I wouldn't listen to us either, but
I've got some Troll Dojo.
No, we don't do Troll Dojo anymore.
No. I'm listening.
Oh, it's funny, I actually dojoed some trolls with Nick, one of our Florida players, because he's trying to figure out a way to beat Ghost Fleet. I came up with Borka 1. That was the answer.
Borka 1, huh?
Yep. Hmm.
Interesting. Borka 1, he's one of the few exceptions to the Troll Dojo Talk rule.
Yeah, Nigel's always down for a beach party.
Yeah.
Borka 1 and Band of Heroes with the ability to dig deep, especially off of FM Blade's, like, 15-inch threat. Like, there's been some talk about it. It's probably solid.
Yeah, and I was also thinking, like, champions with immunity to spells could really fuck up her ability to take zones.
This is so weird.
Oh, absolutely.
These guys want to talk about War
Machine. Yeah, and then on top of that, throw a sorcerer in there so that way you can actually adequately deal with Revenant crew. Or, I'm sorry, Ghost Raiders. Like, yeah. Because it prevents the need for an overtaxing Krillstone when you probably have another role for it anyway.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
It seemed like it was kind of all coming together. I don't know. I still fear that list gets shot off the table or something like that, or lists like it, but I think there's something there, potentially.
Well, also, if it does get shot at the table, you have your other... But Dreadfleet, does the Dreadfleet shoot okay? I mean, considering it's Denny?
Yeah, it does.
It does when it has Pete Denny.
Hmm. Yeah, so that's like, a little weird if you're saying
have
that
like 9, 14 inch.
If you're worried about shooting, you're like, oh, hmm. It seems like it's sort of a... You have some tech against it, but also the...
They also just walk, and I think what Pirate Pistols are arranged... 8, so they've got a 14-inch threat.
But they get 2 turns of it.
Because Denny. Yeah.
Well, the champs actually would probably have a hard time. Like, I think it's legitimately hard for Goose Fleet to remove those champs. They can't be targeted by spells, and it can't be knocked down.
They can still be feeded on and just charged. Like,
yeah.
-2 defense and -2 armor is enough to put them in, like, you know, POW 12 charges, right? So that adds up fast. Well, there's a million of them.
There's still defense 12 against melee attacks.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'm not saying it's automatic. I'd have to see it played out. But I also, like, at least in Band of Heroes, you get the RFP, right? So that's good.
Yep.
So that helps a lot.
And you can put a lot of models on the table with that theme too.
Yeah.
And just hope something gets through.
Yeah, absolutely. Pirates are Def 13, undead pirates.
Oh yeah, yep. Like the.
So that's a little rough when they, on Denny's feet turn, like your counterattack is going to be pretty muted.
Yeah, you got a felt caller.
That helps. Yeah, that helps for one unit, for sure.
Free felt caller.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. It's interesting to think about. Like, Ghost Fleet's such a...
instantly die to Scourge.
He doesn't instantly die to Scourge? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's... when he's stumbling drunk, he's steady, right? So, that helps.
Yep.
I was also looking at Rock and Slag Trolls, because Stalkers are a big deal in that list. And I think Primal Slag Trolls can potentially handle them.
If they get to them, I mean, they don't out-threat them.
No, but they...
And they get... Stalkers kind of go wherever they want for a turn. I don't know.
Well, it sounded promising for a second. Now it's been pooped on. I don't feel as confident in this situation.
Feeding on slag trolls are not fun.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, it's...
Most of the time I dojo, which is I come up with like a kind of cool idea, and it starts to sound good, and then you start realizing that it is not good.
Oh,
like Gore Shade 4.
Say it's not so, Mahu.
That's why I don't podcast anymore. I don't want to like spread my bad opinions out to the world.
Yeah, we let you guys do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually very fair, unfortunately.
Yeah, we own that.
Yeah. All right, let me see if I can get this.
Are we waiting for anybody?
No, I think...
Getting ready to roll. You guys, nope. We'll just... the way this intro will work is Nigel and I will intro ourselves, and then we'll just go around the horn. It'll be Brent, Scott, then you guys. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. Hello, and welcome to episode 316 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
Oh, good job, Scott. This is John, and I play Protector of Menoth.
Nigel, and I play Kador.
Brent and I play Retribution this week.
Scott and I play...
Oh, Skype. Sorry. Sorry.
I'm Matthew, and I play Retribution of Syrah.
I think Clint?
Oh, Clint, I play Mercs
okay.
Right now.
Let's try it again.
And then Scott?
He said, she
I'm
said,
sorry.
We're last.
I cut over Scott. It's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was a good practice run.
Uh-huh.
This time, with better execution, you guys ready? And more flavor.